Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Chet, and we are holding at the Halakha Mishnah, which we will have for special considerations introduced by our famous Kapitan, Sir Richard.
So, the Halakha Mishnah.
Okay, so now we finally get to the question of, and this, as you can imagine, is going to be rather complex. What happens, we talked about this briefly before in the context of our overall flow about Eruv, but what happens if you got 2 days in a row in which you're not allowed to be Yotzeh Chutz L'Tchum, you got Yontav and Shabbos, and the question that we want to know is, can you have a separate Eruv in opposite directions on Yontev that comes before Shabbos and then switch to the other direction on Shabbos? Would you have to do these Erevin, if that's possible, would it have to be done before the beginning of both days of Kedusha? Or do we see each one of these days as a different day and therefore you would need to redo the Erev the next day for the second day? Are you allowed to make an Erev on Yontev for Shabbos? Are you allowed to make an Erev on Shabbos for Yontev? Is that considered to be hachana? Is there a problem of being kone a makom shvisa on Shabbos or Yontav? Can you make a kinyan? These are just some of the questions that arise along with a continued problem of breira, if you want to make a decision. And as we can see, Richie is fully engaged and very excited by the Mishnah that he just introduced.
Rabbi, this is so topical. Can you walk more than 500 meters to this house? This is your place. You can't go out from that because you're quarantined.
Excellent question. And if you've got a pass, does the pass change once you decide? Was it actually written in the other direction before Shabbos? Now, this would be a wonderful quantum experiment. Does the writing change? Or have you entered a new universe in which that writing was always there? So let us look at the Gemara, at the Mishnah, and then explore the sugya in more detail. Okay, so obviously you can't have two separate Mokum Shvisas on one day of Kedusha, right? In other words, you're not going to be able to say, well, my place for Shabbos for Friday night is to the east of the city, and for Cholent in the morning, since I got to go to my friend on the west of the city, that it's clear. Shabbos is Shabbos. I mean, where are you for Shabbos? Okay. Look, the question is, how about if you've got a Yontav before Shabbos or a Shabbos before a Yontav? What about that? Says Reb Eliezer, if you have a Yontav asamuch l'Shabbat, whatever comes first, I don't care whether it comes before Shabbos, it comes after Shabbos, or it's a Friday Yontav or it's a Sunday Yontav, what you can do is, before the days, you can make two Erevs. Ma'ariv Adam Shnei Eruvim, and you put them on opposite sides of the city, and you can say, my Erev for the first day, whether that's Yontav or Shabbos, my Erev for the first day of the next 2 days is towards the Mizrach, on the second day of the next 2 days it will be for the Ma'arav, or vice versa, Rishon Ma'arav, B'sheni Mizrach. And somebody's interrupting programs. And if you end up not wanting to lose your trum in the other direction, you can also say, I want an Erev, but only for the first day. But on the second day, I don't want an Erev. I want to be able to be like everybody else in this town and travel 2,000 amas in all directions and not lose any of my space in the direction of my Erev. Or I could say the opposite. I could say my Erev is only for the second day, but on the first day, whether that's Shabbos or Yontem, I'm like everybody else. I can move wherever I want. So in other words, there's no interdependence between your Mokum Shvisa of Shabbos and Yontem. Whatever your place is for one day, that is not necessarily your place for the other day. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, you can't do that. You got to make up your mind. Either you make up your mind that your Erev is on the west, or you make up your mind that is your Erev is on the east, or don't make an Erev at all. If you don't want to have an Erev on one day, then don't make an Erev. But you can't split it. Or either you make an error for both days or you don't make an error for either day. Now, those two statements seem to be exactly the same, and there's simply different ways of stating the same thing, and the Gemara is going to ask them, what? Anyway, but obviously they hold that the 2 days, Shabbos, Yontif, or Yontif, Shabbos, are one long defined Mokum Shvisa for some reason. That seems to be what they're saying. So if that's the case, you can only have one Tchum. So we call that Kedusha Achatz. So suppose you want to have an Erev for the 2 days, as we say, you can have an Erev for 2 days, but obviously the Erev is going to have to survive. Now, can you be sure that the Erev survives? So what do you do in case the cats get hungry? Well, you can bring your food for the Erev on Erev the Yom Tov or Erev the Shabbos, meaning whatever the Erev of the first day is. You stay with that Erev, not meaning you stay, but the person that you sent, because if you stay, you wouldn't have to send the Erev there. You stay with the Erev until it's dark. We had all of this before. After Tzetzet Kochavim, you can then, assuming that the first day was a Yontem, you could take your Erev and go back home. And that way nobody's going to eat the Erev overnight. But then the next day, as Yontem ebbs away, and it's time for Shabbos very soon, you better go back there, put your Erev back where it was, and then it's Shabbos. Now, that gives you an Erev for Shabbos. As far as what's going to happen to your Erev, I'd advise eating it before the cats get to it. So then you can eat your Erev, and then it's fine because you already koveh the Erev ben hashmashes. And that way, it's great. So then it was worth the walk, wasn't it? I mean, because that way you get an Erev, and not only that, it was worth the work because now you get to eat. So you're mistaker beruva. It's nice to look at the positive, and the fact that it's a long walk shouldn't bother you. Okay, the Chachamim continue with this. This is obviously only according to Chachamim that you need to be sure it's two different than him. So if, however, Lamaisa, the Erev ended up being eaten up by that cat on the first day, or by you, for that matter, on the first day, so then the Erev is only good for that day, because now on the second day there wasn't any Erev, and therefore you would be in trouble at that point. So then that's why we wanted you to make sure that you keep it there, but over here it was eaten up. So then you don't have an Erev for the second day, and Rebbe Eliezer says to them, wait a second, so now you've just agreed to me. I don't understand. You guys are like, you say that it's all one din. Okay, so if it's all one din, then why do I need to go back and put my Erev out again? If it's all one din, I put my Erev out yesterday. Now you're telling me, yeah, but if something happens to the Erev in the middle of the day, then it's only good for the first day. You said there is no first day and second day. You said it's all Kedush Achas. Now you're turning around and agreeing with me. Okay, so then Modim Atem Lishem Shtei Kedushas. So now you agree with me? How can you hold both of these things? Okay, very good point. Says the Gemara, all right, what were the first two things that the Chachamim say? Either you decide that it's on one side, meaning you decide it's on one side for both days, right? L'shnei yamin. And then you say, okay, or you decide it's for both days, meaning what? That it's on one side for both days. That's the same thing. It's all the same thing. Hayuka maita. No, you don't understand. What the Rabbanon are saying is a message. They're saying to Rebbe Eliezer, saying like this, look, do you not agree that either you make an Erev to the east or you make an Erev to the west on the same day? You can't have a half a Shabbos to go to eat your Friday night meal in one direction to go to have cholent the next morning in the opposite direction. Aren't you moded to that? So they say, well, of course, aval, absolutely. So, okay, say the Chachamim. Okay, Rebbe Eliezer, you admit that you can't do it for the same day. So, k'shem shem arvin l'yom echad chatzil adorim v'chatzil atzofan. This is the second part. That's what they say, l'shnei yamin. So, the same way you couldn't do that for one day, you cannot do it for 2 days, because it's all one day. K'chem arvin l'shnei yamin. To say yom echad l'mizrach v'yom echad l'marav, because they're not repeating themselves. They're pointing out that you yourself understand you can't have a half a Mokum Shvisa. So why can you have a half a makom shmita for Shabbos and Yantav? And obviously, Rebbe Eliezer says, I don't understand. That's because if it's one day, it's Kedusha Achas. If it's 2 days, it's two completely different dinim. What does my tchum on Shabbos have to do with my tchum on Yantav? I don't understand your point. Okay, now, we have a braita that says, Amar Lehem Rebbe Eliezer. Listen here, guys. Suppose a guy doesn't put an Erev. He simply walks to the spot where he wants his makom shmita to be. He stays there until it gets dark. Okay? What's the halacha? And he's kone that Erev, correct? We all agree to that. That's why we were saying all along, if you're talking about leaving an Erev there and staying there to make sure it wasn't eaten by the cat, it can't be the guy who's actually the Erev is for, because then he wouldn't need to leave an Erev anyway. But what about if he does go out there himself? So do you agree that he has to go back the next day and he has to be there again on the next day, and that the Erev that he made the day before is not going to be enough? I mean, because you said if the Erev is eaten up, it's not enough. So if he didn't go out there again, it's not enough. Okay. Are you not going to agree that if his Erev was eaten, you said, Nechale Ruvo B'Yom Rishon, he can't rely on it for Yom Sheni? So they say, yes, absolutely, yes, aval, certainly. Says Rebbe Eliezer, okay, so clearly, a lie. So very clearly, we are saying that it should stay Kedushas. Obviously, it is to Kedushas. So you're on my side, which of course is what he said in the Mishnah. So how indeed do we understand this contradiction in the logic of the Rabbana? Says the Gemara, it's not a contradiction in the logic. The Rabbanan simply don't know what they're saying. In other words, they're not sure. The Rabbanan are svukim esufkele. They do not know how to deal with the Yont of Shabbos interrelationship. So maybe it's considered to be Kedusha Achas, maybe it's considered to be Shtei Kedushas, and because of that, they paskin l'chumra in both directions. If you don't have an Erev, or you didn't go out there on the second day, you can't rely on it. But on the other hand, if you do have an Erev on the first day, you cannot be kovei a different Erev for the second day, because of the fact that maybe actually it would be one Kedusha. Okay, now getting back to what they said to Rebbe Eliezer. They said to Rebbe Eliezer, are you not ready to agree that you cannot make an Erev betchila? You can't initially make your Erev. If you didn't have an Erev before from Erev Yantav, you can't go out and make an Erev on the Yantav for the Shabbos. You agree? Yeah, of course I agree. Aval, for sure. You can't make an Erev on Shabbos for Yantav. Oh, say the Rabbanan, so? Yeah, you're sitting here agreeing to us? Then that means that halai kedusha achasi. So then you're agreeing that it's all one kedusha. Says Rebbe Eliezer, what are you talking about? The reason you can't make the Erev on Yantav for Shabbos is because of the famous Isser of Achana. You're not allowed to prepare doing things on Yantav for Shabbos or on Shabbos for Yantav. That we learn out of the Pasuk. It says, Vayaba Yom HaShishi Ve'chino Tasher Yavil. Estam Yom HaShishi is a Yom Chol. But if today is not a Yom Chol, then you cannot be Ve'chino Tasher Yavil. That's an amazing insight. What does that have to do with the question of whether it's one Kedusha or not for Eved Six? You're throwing in irrelevant points. Tana Rabbana, a Rave Barak Lav. B'yom Rishon, suppose you actually did it, you went out there, you stayed there until the night, then you still need to do that B'yom Sheni, because otherwise you'll become just a normal guy in the town. Same thing is true, if you left your Erev there, Nechalei Ruvo B'yom Sheni, Ein Yotzei Alav B'yom Sheni. Then you can, B'yom Rishon, then Ein Yotzei Alav B'yom Sheni, for the same reason. So this is Rebbe, which means that Rebbe is saying that the two Yomim, Shabbos and Yantav, are Shnei Kedushas, and therefore an Erev on one is not going to work for the other. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, Amen? And Rabbi Yehuda says that no, actually it's a problem 100% of Chamar Gamal. So as we said, the Chamar Gamal, this guy is basically, he's the same Shita as the Rabban, you see. He doesn't know. So since he doesn't know what the din is, if it's considered to be all one Kedusha, so then that means that the Erev that was there from yesterday is still good today. But if there's Shtei Kedusha saying, So then he is stuck in the city. So he is chamar gamal between his extended Erev and the city, because now he lost possibly some of that area of the city, or maybe all of it, by making his trum all the way on the other side. And I'm not sure if that's valid, so he can't use it. And on the other hand, he can't really be a member of the city to move to the other side, because maybe it is good. So he is stuck in between those two limits, okay? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gokomer, the halacha is, you don't even need to make an Erev on the second day. Now, so this is a third shita. You can absolutely rely on the fact that if you made an Erev on the first day, there's no need to make an Erev on the second day. Your Erev was eaten up on the first day. You can still rely on that Erev on the second day, whether it was Yom Tov Shabbos or Shabbos Yom Tov. So that means that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka hold like neither of the previous shitot, where over there the Rabbanan were misupak, and according to Rabbi, we were saying according to Rabbi Eliezer, he says that you do need to make on the second day. They say it is 100% a single kedusha, and if it's a single kedusha, why bother going out and making it again? And Rav says, okay, I can tell you halacha lemaisa. Now halacha lemaisa, we have four separate zakenim who all paskin the same thing. I say those, you put them together with Rabbi Eliezer, these people all hold that they're definitely two kedushas. And I'll tell you who they are. They are Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, which of course is insane because they just said the exact opposite. We're doing it again, right? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, which I'll be able to show you, Rebbe quotes Stam. And some of them say that one of the four was Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar means, says Rebbe Rashi, wherever we say Rebbe Elazar, the Tana, we don't see which Rebbe Elazar. It's Rebbe Elazar ben Shamua. And those are, in which case we would take out Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Yehuda, Stimata'a to get the four Zikenim. Huh? What? Wait, I'm going nuts here. We just quoted Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka to be the only ones who said the exact opposite of what you said, okay? Even the Chachamim didn't say the exact opposite. They said they're not sure. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi said, you don't even need to make an Erev the second day because it is definitely all one period. So what's Rav coming along to say? Oh, and these shitas all hold, like Rabbi Eliezer, that the 2 days are two completely separate days. Who? No, well, this is another flip, you see. Epoch. And when we're talking about flipping what direction you're Erev in, and we're constantly flipping everybody's opinions over here. So instead, the Brizer should have said over there that Dafke, it's Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, that they hold you what I need to have another Erev because they're two separate different Kedushas. Oh, okay, so then they're basically saying the same thing that Rebbe said. You quoted Rebbe before. So why are they arguing? It was Rebbe said one thing and they said another thing. Now you're saying, no, they actually said the same thing as Rebbe. No, yeah, I changed that to read not Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, but rather V'chein Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. V'chein, they also agreed with Rebbe, and the halacha is that it's actually two completely separate days. Oh, so if V'chein, then why didn't Rav mention Rebbe? He said, I've got four people that hold this, then they hold it like the Shita Rebbe Eliezer. We should have mentioned Rebbe also, no? I mean, we're saying V'chein. No. Yes, it's true that Rebbe said it, but Rebbe was quoting. He didn't agree with it. Rebbe Tanila, but Lo Sagala, Rav had a Kabbalah from the way that he was taught by his Rabbein, that the point over here is that the correct way of understanding Rebbe Shmuel ben Asher, Rebbe Yochanan ben Broka is to say it as V'chein. And the correct way to understand Rebbe is that he himself didn't hold of that. Well, I mean, so maybe Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, if you're saying that they say v'chein, maybe they also don't personally hold of it. And the same way Rebbe, they're saying they said the same thing Rebbe. You're saying that Rebbe quoted it, but he didn't agree with it. So maybe they're also quoting it and didn't agree with it. How do you know? They have a right to say the Shita is that there are four Zakanian that hold the same thing as Rebbe. Maybe they don't. Maybe they only quoted it. Says the Gemara, you don't understand. This is not Rav guessing. This is the way Rav was taught. He was taught that Rebbe does not hold it, and that Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yochanan, Benosha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, they said it, and it's their Shita. Fine. This wasn't, therefore he came along to say the halakha. There's actually four Shitas that hold, besides Rabbi Eliezer, that hold that it's considered to be two completely different dinim. And Kinach Nafshe, the Rav Huna, after Rav Huna died, so they came, they would come into the Beis HaMedrash, and in his chus and so on, so Rav Chista comes into the Beis HaMedrash, and he shows, remember, Rav Huna was the authority on the Shitas of Rav, it's Rav Huna quoting Rav. So he pointed out, we got a contradiction here, because Rav, how could you say that Rav said that the Halacha is like the Arba Zakenim, which follow Rav Eliezer Shita, that Shabbos and Yom Tov are definitely two Kedushas and therefore should be treated that way. But it says Beferish that if you have Shabbos and Yom Tov either before or after, that Rav himself says that if an egg is laid on the first day, so then it's Usur on the second day, whatever that day is. So then that contradicts the idea is that they're two completely separate days, because then it was Mukhan from yesterday, and it wasn't Mukse. It's not Neilad. So if it's not Neilad, why isn't it Mutter on the second day? Now you're saying, no, the 2 days are one day. You just finished Paskening with five separate Shitas. Excuse me, you quoted Rav as saying that Shabbos and Yom Tov are two separate days. So then if they're two separate days, then something that was present before the day, the egg was laid on Yom Tov. So you're saying, well, the egg was laid on Yom Tov, so it wasn't ready to be eaten before Yom Tov. Okay, fine, that's Yom Tov. Now it's Shabbos. You said Shabbos and Yom Tov are two different days. Now you're saying, no, if the egg was laid on Yom Tov, it's also for Shabbos. What the heck is going on? Well, my rabbi, again, you are missing the main point. The issue over there has nothing to do with whether it's Kedusha HaKadosh or Shtei Kedushas. The point is that if the egg was laid on the Yom Tov, if that was the first day, or on the Shabbos, if that was the first day, you cannot use it, not because of the Isra of Mukta and Neilav, but because the fact is that the closing stages of the egg's development were done on a Shabbos or a Yom Tov, and you cannot use a Shabbos and Yom Tov to prepare for a Shabbos or Yom Tov. That's the problem. So the Isra over there is Hachana, again, the Tanya, Vayaba Yom HaShishi, a standard Yom HaShishi, Ve'echino et Asher Yaviyo, right? Which means only Yom HaShishi, Chol, can be making for Shabbos. Chol can be making for the other type of Shabbos, which is called Shabbaton, which is Yom Tov. But you cannot have a Shabbaton preparing for Shabbos or a Shabbos preparing for Shabbaton. Ein Yom Tov mechin l'Shabbat, ve'ein Shabbat mechinah l'Yom Tov, and therefore what we're talking about over here has nothing to do whether it's two completely different days or it's all the same day. There's a different problem. And Tosu says over here, this Isser of Achana is an Isser d'Oraisa. So then if that's the case, says Abaya, why isn't it Achana? It says in Mishnah over here, what do you do according to the Rabban? We just said, what do you do if you want to make an error for both days? So you bring it there, and then you go out again on the next day, right? You take it back home, the first day of Shabbos. On Yom Tov, you go out, and you stay out there with it, and then you eat it there. Understand? How are you allowed to walk out with that food on Yom Tov for the purpose of preparing a Mokum Shvi'is on Shabbos, huh? Put that in your pipe and smoke it. I mean, if you're telling me there's an Isser of Achana, then this is also Achana. So it should be also. HaKamechim Yom Tov l'Shabbos. So what kind of Eitz is this? We're telling him to do an Isser d'Oraisa. You should go out and be making Yom Tov l'Shabbos. Omale Rabba, there was another factor that you forgot all along, my dear friend. You are assuming that the Sofayom is Kona the Erev, in which case we are using Yontev, the last minute of Yontev, to make an Erev for Shabbos. But that's not true. It's actually the end of Bein HaShemashos, which is the Tchilas Hayom, which is the beginning of Shabbos, and therefore it was Shabbos was making for itself. So you're saying, okay, but I mean, you walked out there, you put it there, that's not an act of Hachana. That's just putting something down, but you didn't effectuate anything. The effectuation of the thing, which is the meaning of Hachana, the effectuation of the thing is actually when Shabbos comes along itself, because it's only the Tchilas Hayom, it's when the second day is come. At that moment, and only at that moment, is it considered to be good. Masha Inkin, when you talk about an egg, the egg was actually ready at the time that it was hatched. Now I can eat it. Okay, so then that means that Shabbos, or if the first day was Yontav, prepared an egg for eating for Shabbos. There's no comparison between the two shitas. Now we're going to have to see, which we'll have to wait for tomorrow, and finish this sugya up, we're going to have to see the question of how this relates to putting things out there, making a kinyan, being kaina shvisa, mokam shvisa, and to the previous issues that we had about the tful yom lugin, which seems to have been the opposite of what Rav is saying here. Remember, Rav said, oh, zot omeret. Yeah, and now all of a sudden we're changing our mind, all to be discussed. What I would like to do very much is to try to position ourselves in what has been going on here and how we have arrived at this particular place in the Masechet, because we've gotten involved in a lot of very complicated issues. So the first part of the parak was very straightforward, or comparatively straightforward. The first part of the parak wanted to define for us what is considered to be the correct food for an Erev. And meanwhile, we went into the whole issue of Bechlal, what is food, and what is considered to be the correct Mokum for the Erev, in the sense of you needing to be in the same place of the Erev, and brought us all types of Chidushim of understanding a new definition of place, understanding the levels of accessibility, and the question of whether there's an issue of increased accessibility because of the fact that the Rabbanan maybe were mako during Bein HaShemashos to access things even with the Nisid Rabbanan. We're gonna see, I think, that is not just a side point, it involves a broader understanding of the parak. Those things were reasonably straightforward. And again, in the kind of mushel that we've been using between classical physics and quantum physics, that was the classical physics part of the parak. From that point on, we got involved in all types of different issues, the most blatant, which is Brera, but we got really involved in all types of issues that had to do with what is the relationship of the individuals making the Erev and his awareness of the Erev to the Erev. And that, it was in all kinds of different ways. It started off simple, whether you need to have this das for Kenyan, and therefore can you use a drone, and can you use a cotton, a cherish, and a shite of a cotton, or a trained monkey, and so on. But remember, that was the first hint that what we were talking about was the das of the miniach of the Erev. So that is the relationship to the observer all of a sudden, instead of what the Erev is, what is the relationship of the individual to the Erev? So that started off easy. Then, again, the next Mishnah eased us into the question of how about if you don't really know what the status of the Erev is? And that was all kinds of questions of Suffolk Erev. And the Suffolk Erev we had with Yossi Shita, that a Suffolk Erev is kosher, and that got us into all types of needs to understand the relationship of a chazaka to the Erev. And because of it, we also got involved in different types of chazakas, where you have one chazak against another chazak, where you have two, you have a chazak of a mikveh, you have a chazak of the one who is tevel in the mikveh, or you have a contradiction between two sets of edim, and that's the source of your suffix rather than a built-in suffix in the Erev proper. These were all types of subtle differences, and once again, involved us in the difference between D'oraisa things and D'rabbanan things. Remember, that is a feature of this entire Masechet, because Erevin is viewed as the primal Rabbanan extension, starting with Avram Avinu, going to Shlomo HaMelech, and therefore all of these discussions of the interrelationship, even the weird remosim that we have about the total information content of the Torah as opposed to the actual Torah Shebikhtav, and the flying Megillah and the 3,200 times more, like wild things, and Baskols and Beis Shammais and Beis Hillels, and all of these things revolve around the fact that this is the marker of this profound interrelationship of Shmira D'Rabbanan on a D'Oraisa. So because of that, we also started to understand that there's not only a question of whether we need to worry about the accessibility in terms of Yisuri D'Rabbanan of Shvuz, which was Machlokas of Rebbe and the Rabbanan, but we also needed to think about the differences of Chazaka and where you can rely on a Chazaka between something which is a D'Oraisa and something which is a D'Rabbanan. So we started off with this, well, when it's a question of a D'Oraisa, so over there Rabbi Yossi was Machmer, but he's willing to go for an easier reliance on Chazaka where it had to deal with the D'Rabbanan. And then we finally came even to a greater distinction, which was this question of whether something has an ikur min ha-Torah or doesn't even have an ikur min ha-Torah. Now that, of course, goes all the way back to that Megillah Ofa, because there's a difference between something that I'm deriving directly from the Torah and something I'm just sort of creating. And that nafkamina, that Tumah has an ikur min ha-Torah, and if you don't hold the Tchumim or D'Oraisa, then Erevin don't even have an ikur min ha-Torah, is, of course, also a function that sits under everything that we do here in the Masechet, because there's obviously two completely different visions of how Eruv Tchumim are going to work if you hold the Tchumim D'Oraisa, if you hold the Tchumim D'Rabbanan. So that really gives us a completely different sense of what it would be that we're looking for when we're Metakin and Eruv. How seriously is the Eruv definitive of your Makom Shvisa? So this led to all types of other sveikas. Sveikas about the Erev, was it mitukan mi ba'od yom, did it get burned up from mi ba'od yom, which led, of course, directly into the question of, okay, what is the moment that we have the kinyan of the Erev? Is the kinyan of the Erev something that I need to be able to define Erev Yom Shabbos? Or is it something that is defined on Shabbos? The question of Sof HaYom Koneh or Tchilas HaYom Koneh. And that brought us into another question of the relationship to Erev, which is, that if your relationship to the Erev is fundamentally important, then we need a Se'uda HaRu'uya Miba'od Yom. And that's a completely different question. It's irrelevant about when the Erev is Chal, because I still need to be able to see and understand that Erev before it's Chal. And therefore, if I'm unable to do that, if it's not Ru'uya Miba'od Yom, for whatever reason, then that's like an entirely new question of it's being Roy for the Erev or not. Okay, so then we had, going on from that, we got into the big sugya of Brera, because that is like the ultimate understanding of the relationship of the person to his das, the person's das to the reality of the Erev. And if really his das is so fundamental to the Erev that it turns out that his observance of the Erev, his determination, his measurement of when that Erev is Chal, makes the Erev retroactively, again, it only appears to us retroactively, but so to speak, it acts at a distance in space and a distance in time, and it tells us what the Erev was at the time of the Knesset of Shabbos, a remarkable kind of idea. So that is, of course, the fundamental question of Brera. And because of that, we got involved in other issues as well about Brera. Brera in terms of taking out Trumas and Maisers when you don't have what to put in what you're ultimately going to be leaving over. Brera of women about the kinim that they had, which will ultimately define which cane goes to who. Brera about somebody who goes to the makolet and buys two bushes of veggies and afterward gives one to an Ama Aretz? Was it defined at the time that he bought it, because in the end he gives it to the guy, or not? All of those things were extensions of the questions of Breira, and they appeared to be sort of tangential to our discussion, but in the end, they turn out to give us a deeper understanding of these options about the Eruv, and because of it, they introduce completely new issues, because we needed to take into consideration unaccounted for, so to speak, in the same terms we're going to be using, unaccounted local variables. And what were those local variables? Some of those local variables yesterday we spoke about were very logistical questions of how likely is it that the bottle of wine will break before there even is a Breira, right? Or a brand new idea about the nature of truma, that truma is not something that just is. Truma has to be visibly emergent, and it needs to be different from whatever it is that isn't the truma. Those were other variables that we needed to take into consideration, but they don't affect the fundamental question of Breira that we had raised legabe the Erevin. It just got us very confused, because of those variables, it looked like people were contradicting themselves in some places. It looked like they were saying Yesh Breira, where other places they had the Ein Breira. Once we introduced the local variables, so then we were able to explain why the particular brisa of Ayo and the issue of whether you can actually take off this wine without having what to put it in, why that involves more things than simply the question of Breira, and that gave us a lot more breath to be able to fit the shitas together without just changing everybody and saying we must have made a mistake, we got it wrong, and so on and so forth. Then that question about the nature of Breira ended up itself yesterday becoming a question of whether there might be a difference in Breira again between a D'oraisa and a D'rabbanan. And that was like a whole new question about the differences, because it certainly would appear on the surface the way Rav Yosef Tainet, either you hold the universe as a universe with Breira or you don't. How could it possibly make a difference whether something is D'oraisa or D'rabbanan? And yet the Gemara insisted that, and this was Rava's idea, that no, it's not true. There really is a difference between the way that the Rabbanan note the implications of such a thing, gentlemen. That if you're dealing with a D'oraisa, and this is something that we understand about the nature of Teresh HaBiksav and about the Luchos HaBris, in a sense, you're dealing with an absolute reality. And therefore, in an absolute reality, there may not be Breira. That may not be a reality that we ever really encounter since the time of the Shiras HaLuchos. But the reality that we live in is a Drabonin reality, so to speak. In other words, it's not locked in stone the way the Luchos are, but rather it's that other flying Megillah, which is why it's a flying Megillah. No, this is a weird kind of metaphor, a flying Megillah, and that becomes, like, why would it have to be flying? Right? I understand the remez that it's a fool and so on and so forth, that the two wings are actually bent up again. But the idea of a flying Megillah means that it's far more elastic in terms of its relationship to place in the way that we see it than the Luchos. You would never imagine the Luchos flying through the air, obviously. It would be an insane metaphor. Luchos can't fly. It's the Osios that are Parchos. You can't have the Luchos flying. So over here, the nature of the Rabbanan is itself fundamentally more involved in the way that the person encounters the world. Isn't that true? That's the idea of the Shivim Ponim L'Torah. That's the idea of the extensions that the Rabbanan can make. That's the idea of the Milchamta Shel Torah. That's the Memtes Ponim Heter, Memtes Ponim Le'iser, and the Afata Se'oznochak Afar Chesed. It's fundamentally part of the way that you encounter the universe. Therefore, Tainez Rava, it is far more likely that there would be an understanding of the nature of Breira in your experience of reality on a Drabonin than it would be in a world which is defined by a D'oraisa. Once you see it that way in the context of the Masechet as a whole, it becomes extremely meaningful, that machlokes. Then we got into another issue, which is very similar to the first. The first issue was, can I define the nature of the Erev, the one Erev that I put? Can I define its direction? But the next situation was exactly the opposite. The two Erevs that I put, can I define their time, not their place? How do we do that? By having 2 days. One day is Yom Tov and one day is Shabbos. Now, how do we deal with the placement of Eruvim at different places and matching those places to the time by my decision subsequently of which one of those Eruvim I want on which day, you see? So can I define that? You understand how that becomes a parallel to the issues that we raised earlier, where there we needed the question of Brera. Over here, we need the question of your involvement in the planning out of the future and whether it's possible for that relationship to an Erev to be broken up by time instead of by space. Now, that led to a three-way machlokes. We had the Rabbanan and the Mishnah that said, we don't know. We're just not sure. And because we're not sure, we need to be machmir in both directions. We can't give you the option of having different directions for an Erev on day one and day two, if one is Shabbos and one is Yontav, whichever direction. That we can't give you because we're not sure that you're actually able to relate to those 2 days as two separate entities. But on the other hand, we can't allow you to get away with just making one Erev and pretending that that one day's Erev is a long-term Erev for 2 days, because maybe each day has to be dealt with separately. So we don't know. Rabbi Eliezer says, well, I do know. And I'm telling you that it's two completely unrelated Kedushas, and you would need to have an Erev for each one of those days. And because of you need to have it, you guys aren't sure you need to have it. I'm sure you need to have it. And once I'm sure you need to have it, it means that it could be completely different Erevin. They could be in totally different places, right? Well, not exactly. Why not exactly? Because, you see, you can't make the Erev for day two on day one. On day one, because of the question of Hachana. That's one issue. And there's another issue. The other amazing issue is, if, in fact, you made Erev 1, 2,000 amas to the east, and Erev 2, 2,000 amas to the west, and you need to have a Su'udah ru'uyah mibo'od yom, you won't have it. Because you can't get to the other side mibo'od yom, and therefore your Su'udah is not accessible. So it's not a Su'udah mibo'od yom. So what that would mean is that there is a shadow influence of one day on the other, even if you hold that it's two separate Kedushas, because of these local variables. And that would mean that if I actually put my Erev all the way out to the east to 2,000 amas, I would not be able to make any Erev to the west because of the reason I can't get there. So the only way that I would be able to have the two Erevs is by balancing it. I could put 1,000 amas out to the east, which would still allow me to be able to walk 1,000 amas, not 2,000, but 1,000 amas to the west. Then I could have another Erev 1,000 amas to the west, which then would be theoretically accessible on day one. So those are the local variables we need to take into consideration even once we're making these adjustments. So that was Shita A and Shita B. The Rabbanan hold that there was a suffix, and Rabbi Eliezer holds, no, it's definitely two separate Kedushas. And then we ended up with yet a third Shita. That was 100%, we originally quoted it as Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch, and Shimon Gamaliel, that you don't even need to make a second Erev, that the 2 days are one day, 100%, and there's no need to worry about what happens to your Erev, even if it gets eaten up, or if you made the Erev Baraglav, you don't need to go Baraglav. We thought that it was those two Shitas. Afterwards, Rav tells us, no, we made a mistake. He had a Kabbalah. That was actually Rebbe quoting Shitas, not his own Shita, whereas actually Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe Shmuel ben Osher, Rebbe Yochanan ben Baruch held exactly the opposite. They held like Rebbe Eliezer, that it was absolutely two separate days. So again, the Shitas are two completely separate days, which allows you to make an Erev in two separate locations. A suffix, whether it's two separate days or one long day, which gives you the worst of both worlds. You can't have an Erev at two separate locations, but you would still need to remake your Erev. Of course, you can't remake it from scratch because then you'll be making, so you would have to do it from before. And the third Shita, you can't have two Erevs, but there's absolutely no need to reiterate an Erev because it's all one day. Once you made that Erev, it's all going to be in the same place for the next 48 hours, and it's not a question of any type of suffix whatsoever. That was the last thing that we had learned yesterday. So then that brought us to the question of Hachana again. The question is, how exactly I think that that's where we got up to. I mean, just in case not, let me go over with you the sugya at the bottom. I'd say the top of the last third of Amud Beis, Lamed Ches Amud Beis. So we asked over there that. No, I think this is actually where we did get up to. You know what? I think that really is what we got up to. And that is Elami Ata Ya'arvu Belugi.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Baruch Hashem. Okay. Yeah, because now that I put myself back in, like, speaking to you, so I'm re-experiencing what it was that I was doing the last time I was speaking to you. Right. So now the question that we're saying, if you're telling me now, all of a sudden, that the Erev only becomes an Erev at the beginning of the next day, which is Tchilas HaYom Kameh. So then we have the obvious issue that we had before. Remember the question that we had before was that you have a Tful Yom pitcher, and the pitcher is only going to be Ro'ui to have this Truma or Meiser, no, the Truma in it at night. Because until the nightfall, it's going to be Matami the Truma if I make a Truma. It won't be Matami Teva, but Matami the Truma. So what can I do? So we said over there, you cannot make an Erev with wine that is Teva, but we ought to be able to make an Erev with a Tnai that I'm saying that it should be Chal. The Trumas and so on should be Chal later, and then it'll be fine. It'll be Truma, but we said Truma is kosher unless you have a Sochus. You know, we had the other explanation, maybe starting about it was Teva, whatever, but even if it's Truma, so it won't be Teva. And yet, according to this, if I say at the moment that this bottle becomes usable for Truma, I am currently now making this tonight that the Truma should be Chal at that point, since that occurs simultaneously, because the way Rabbi was just telling us, the Erev is Chal only at the instant of Seisa Kochavim, the very last moment of Bein HaShemashas. Well, that's true about Erev Shemesh too. So then that means that the two things become Chal at once. So then why is it that it says we are not supposed to use the Lugin? Must be because the Erev becomes an Erev at the end of the previous day and not at the beginning of the next day. And that's what we said before. Remember, we said, well, if you can't use Lugin, that proves that the Erev actually takes place with Sof Hayom. And now, because we have more information about local variables, now we know that that's not true. Why? Because really we still have our new variable, and since over here it only becomes, it's Teva, as long as it was daytime, it's Teva. Show me where my relationship to an edible Erev is. The knowledge that I will have an Erev is not enough. I need to be connected to that Erev as part of the last part of the Perek, which is talking about my Das and its connectedness to the Erev that I want to have. So that's a completely new idea that we're talking about now. Okay, so therefore, we've introduced by, in terms of this local variable, a completely new element of Bina Tzedarut. Okay, now the question is whether that's even true. Because if you say that Be'ina and Se'ura Ru'ya Miba'od Yom, then how do you explain Reb Eliezer's Shita that you can make an Erev to the east on one day and to the west on the next day? If you did that, then your Erev would not be Roy Miba'od Yom, because you couldn't get from the east to the west because it would be outside of your Trum. Aha. So then it would be a Erev that was not Ru'ya Miba'od Yom. And yet Reb Eliezer says, no, that's not a problem. And Rabbi says, what's the problem? What, you thought Reb Eliezer was talking about that monach le besof alpayim amalekan, besof alpayim amalekan? If he really went the full 2,000, like we said, we've got a shadow effect over here of these two alternative universes from your different days. And the shadow effect is because of Be'in and Suda Ru'uya, which interrelates the days. So if you had gone 2,000 amas in one direction, you couldn't have an Erev in the other direction because you wouldn't be able to get there. But if you only went 1,000 amas in each direction, the 1,000 amas would limit your Yitzhiya to the other direction, but would limit it precisely to where you had that other Erev, in which case it would be accessible in Mibel Yom. Brilliant. Okay. Now, a question would be, getting back to the issue of Hachana, and we are about to find out
Not necessarily does everybody buy into the idea that hachana includes the need to have things being ready in order to be able to use them, yes, but that they become usur if they ended up being mechen mishabbos l'chol. That concept is called hachana de rabba, because that was Rabba's chiddush, that if an egg is laid, this is the whole beginning of Masechet Beitza, that if an egg is laid on Yontav before Shabbos, then that means that Yontav was mechen for Shabbos, and therefore that egg is usur on Shabbos. A completely new idea that Rabba extends from the din in the Torah that you're not allowed to be making something and you have to be making things from before. He wants to create this concept that anything that ended, if it's a natural process, if it ended up being making something for the next day, then it's us. Whoa. Okay. So based on that, we had the whole problem of creating an Erev for the next day, because that would be a Hachana. So that gave us a problem. Because remember that we said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if somebody went out for the first day of Shabbos Yontav or Yontav Shabbos, right? He still has to go out again the next day and be there with his feet. If he went out, not personally, but gave a shliach, an erev, some bread and whatever it was, on the first day, then he has to make sure that it's out there again on the second day. How can he do that? Why isn't that hachana? Why isn't putting out an Erev hachana? Or why isn't going out there hachana? Because, now we're assuming that the problem is, and this relates to the overall question about your relationship to the kinyan of the Erev, which started with the sugya of Cheres Shaita V'Katan. We're assuming that when you create an Erev, you have to make a statement that says, I am walking here to this place and standing here because I want this to be my Mokum Shvisa. So you're making a formal declaration that this is your Mokum Shvisa, because otherwise it's just sort of a random event that you happen to be there at that particular moment. If you're putting down that piece of bread, you're supposed to say, possibly, this, I mean, it may not extend to the bread, but certainly if you're just there, so then the fact that I need to make an actual proclamation means that I'm being mechen. So how can you do that? Wouldn't you, Rabbi, I mean, of all people, you know, this is hachana de Rabbi. Answers, Rabbi, you don't have to say anything when you go out there. Well, you think you have to make some kind of declaration? You don't have to say a word. Misava does the former meeting. The guy goes and he sits there. So that's not called hachana. And that would be true, apparently, the Gemara says. Now, here we're, again, attacking the fundamental question of what is your conscious relationship to your Erev. That involved us in the whole Breira issues and so on. Suppose you are fast asleep, okay? You're going through the desert. You get very, very hot and tired. It's Friday, and you fall asleep. You wake up, and oh my God, it's after Seis HaKochav. Now, what's going to happen to you? You were in this place at the moment that the Erev was Chal, either Sof HaYom or Tchilas HaYom. You were in this place. Is it a good Erev because you were there? Or do we say, well, what do you mean? You were fast asleep. You didn't really have any connection to that place. You weren't consciously creating a Mokum HaShvisah for yourself. Is that sufficient to be able to be called an Erev? Aha, uh-huh. Now that's a fascinating question. There's another question that would apparently relate to. Normally there's a halacha that we haven't met yet, and that halacha is that any item that is owned by someone has the same tchum as that person. So in other words, if I want to borrow something from you, I can't take it out of its tchum. Even though I can walk out of the tchum, I can't take it out of the tchum. Okay, so now this question about whether consciousness is required for the definition of a kinyan of an Erev ought to also define the question of whether something that doesn't belong to anyone could possibly have a tchum. Because we don't believe that a cup that was left outside in the desert and isn't owned by anybody has a brain to be able to have the this is the old question about what collapses a waveform, right? So the cup is there, but there's no consciousness attached to the cup. Therefore, would that cup have a trum or not? So if my trum is defined and I want to move this cup away from where I find it, if it actually has its own makom shvisa, I'm going to have to worry about what is its trum, right? Okay, so can I take it and come back home with it if there was a way for me to carry it? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that the fact is that even a cup is kone amakom shvisa. So if a cup is kone amakom shvisa, that means that mind is not a function of shvisa. In which case, I would say over here that a declaration of kinyan shvisa is not relevant. So it would appear on the surface that Rabbah was buying into that. And Rabbah was saying, well, since I believe that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is correct and that even things that don't have a brain are still going to have a makom shvisa, and therefore a person who's fast asleep, I'm saying, would get a makom shvisa. And based on that, if a guy goes out and he happens to be there, it's just the fact that he's there. That's not hachana. And that's what he's saying. Says the Gemara, no. You do not have to limit it to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. The two sugyas may be very different. It could be that even the Chachomim that argue with Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and that would be that a few tamer rabbana, and they hold that somebody who falls asleep is not going to be kind of a makom shvisa, they would still agree that you do not have to make any type of declaration when you're making your Erev. Because the machlokas of the Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Rabbanan was only about a guy who's fast asleep. But a guy who is not fast asleep may be different, even though he doesn't say anything. Because a guy who's fast asleep does not have consciousness. So he's not capable of making that statement, even if he wanted to. Mashenki, if the guy is awake, it may only be consciousness that's important, and not an actual measurement, so to speak, by making the declaration that this is where I want to have my makom shvisa. Okay, so now what are we saying now? That Rabbah holds that you cannot make an Erev if you would have needed to say anything. But fortunately, Rabbah, who is the author of the idea of Achana de Rabbah, he says, but it's a good thing that there's really no need to make a declaration. And Mamela, everything works out in the Mishnah. If you were Ma'ariv on the first day, go walk out there and be there on the second day. Don't say anything. And Mamela, that would be enough. Omar le Rabba bar of Chanin le Abaye, man, is this a mistake? Let me tell you something. If Rabba had known the following brisa, he would never have said what he said. Why? Because it's based on a big kula about the simple concept of being meichin. What does being meichin mean? Because whatever being meichin from one day to the next means is going to define the Hachana de Rabbah also, right? Now look at this. The Braita says if Rabbah had heard this Braita, he would have realized he's wrong and he would have changed his mind. A person can't walk to Sof Sadeo. He wants to walk to the edge of his field on Shabbos. What is he doing in a field on Shabbos? He doesn't want to chas v'shalom do anything. He wants to see what it is that needs to be done after Shabbos. And that way, when he calls this workman after Shabbos, he's going to be able to say, there's a broken line in such and such a place. Fix it right now. Or he's going to be able to say, the area in sector 4 looks like it needs to get water. Please water it. And whatever. So he needs to be there before Shabbos to get that straight. He's not allowed to walk there. And not only that, Kayot Sebo, furthermore, he would not be allowed to take a little walk up to the edge of the city gate. Why? Because that's where they always put, because of the sewage issues, they would put the bathhouses. And he wants to be the first one to get into that bathhouse before Shabbos, before the crowds come. So he's going to walk on Shabbos. He's going to like just sit around there. And then the minute, it's like the smoking minion, right? The minute Shabbos is out, he's got some cigarettes hidden there. This guy's got a bathhouse hidden there. So, no, you're not allowed to do that. Kadesh yikanes l'merchatz miyad. If he had heard that, hodarba, he would have had charata for sure. Because, I mean, walking out to the Erev is not any different than walking out to your field, and it says over here that it's usher. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, right? And this says the Gemara to Rabba Bar Rav Chanin, you're wrong. Rav Rava actually did know about this braita, and even so he felt it had nothing to do with our issue. Lohi shamale velo hadale. He didn't change his mind for a simple reason. The problem over there in the braita is not a real technical problem of hachana. It's because of the fact that it looks terrible. It looks like hachana, because anybody that sees a guy walking out to the edge of his field says, I wonder what he's tippy-toeing down there for. I'll bet it has to do with getting ready to do work on Mitzray Shabbos. So it looks awfully hachana-like. What in the world is a guy doing walking out to the gate of the city? There's only one thing out there, his pack of cigarettes or his bathhouse. And therefore, obviously, he's been making himself, right? So that's why we answered it, because of the Gezerah. Masha Enkein, somebody is walking to a place where it happens to be that he's going to make an Erev, okay? Now, that's a completely personal thing. Nobody has any idea that he intends to make an Erev there. So you'll say, so what's he doing out there? He must have a... Not true. Let's say the guy is a yeshiva bacher, okay? So if he's a yeshiva bacher, he doesn't know where he's going. He's just wandering around, talking with his chavrusa about a sugya, and all of a sudden he finds himself in the middle of nowhere. He has absolutely no idea. You know the old stories that they said about my grandfather, Zatzal. He used to take walks. It's mamish this gemara. Now, what he used to do is he would chazer, every 3 days he would chazer shas, bal peh. So he would take very long walks, like hours long walks. In one direction, he would chazer one seder, and the other direction back, he would chazer another seder. And then the next day, then every 3 days, he ended up with all shis d'sedarim. Now, so what used to happen is that he would get so involved in the learning, he would have absolutely no idea where he was, and he couldn't find his way back. And so, you know, the old joke was that they actually used to, they made sure that he went out with a nickel. In those days, that's what a telephone call cost. He went out with a nickel so that whenever he was lost, he would just go to they used to have telephone booths all over the place. You know, you remember those old days. And they'd just go into a local telephone and dial the yeshiva, and someone would drive out if you just tell them, like, where you are. He says, I'm calling because I don't know where I am. Exactly. So you go outside, you look at the corner where the telephone booth is, and you tell them the name of the streets, and that way they'll come out to those streets and they'll pick you up at that telephone booth. So the apocryphal story is that the first time that he did this, they asked him where he is, and he walked outside and he looks up and he comes back into the telephone booth and he says, I'm on the corner of telephone and telephone. Okay, anyway, that was the apocryphal story. But the Gemara over here actually is semich on this, that anybody who takes a look at a Talmud Chacham who's walking around never thinks that he's going anywhere in particular. He's just wandering around thinking. And if the guy's in Amo Aretz and he's walking around, so then they'll say, okay, he's walking around, you know, like Shoal was walking around. He's looking for a lost donkey somewhere or something. I mean, I don't know. Why would I think of all crazy things that he's going out here in order to make an Erev? So over there, says Rabbi, I don't think it's a big problem at all. And then, just to complete what it was that Rav Yehuda had said, Gufa, let's just go through his entire thing. Rav Yehuda, if you were ma'ariv with your raglayim the first day and you wanted to be good for the second day, this was Aliba de Chachamim, then you could go out on the second day to be there. If you used bread on the first day, you could put that bread out there on the second day. And if you want to use the bread on the first day, you could still make an Erev by just being there on the second day, or vice versa. Richie, am I allowed to poison your neighbor's dog? Erev, huh?
Thank you. It's the bane of my wife's life.
I mean, it's just unbelievable chutzpah. I don't understand how such a thing is allowed, Bichlal.
I have no idea, but the mayesh can.
So if they end up finding out that the neighbors poisoned it, they'll arrest you, I'm afraid.
I'll be quiet.
Okay. So, and you can use pas the second day, your feet the first day. But the thing is, the one thing that you can't do is if you made an Erev with your own raglayim on the first day, you cannot make an Erev with pots on the second day. Why is that? Because the only thing we allowed you to do is to replace the original pots that you had. But you cannot be ma'ariv b'tchila b'pot. You can't use the pot milechatchila, because if you would, then you would have to say, this pot is here in order to make an Erev. Whereas if I'm just reiterating the position of the pot from the day before, I would not have to do that, you see. So because of that, there's this big difference. So if he made an Erev with pas on the first day, there's not a problem. Then he could be ma'ariv with pas on the second day. So the question is that if that's the case, I mean, then what you're saying is that was basically the second part of what he had said in all of his six different situations. So if he's ma'ariv with pas beyom rishon, he can use it the second day. What's the difference between the first day, the first case where he wasn't ma'ariv with pas, he was ma'ariv with ragla? Why isn't that the same thing? That's because, Shmuel, you're using the same bread. If you use the same bread, then you don't need to say, what is it here for? What do you mean, what is it here for? It's the same bread that was here from before. It's the same Erev that was there from before. And Taina's Ravashi, look at the Mishnah. It's obvious. Why did the Mishnah give us this whole Eitzah that if you had Yontif before Shabbos, so what you should do is you should bring it there, right? And then you wait with it and take it home on Leil Yontif, and then bring it back during the day for the second day, and then you eat it and go home, right? So why did it tell you to bring the Erev back home and to save it and to bring it the next day? I mean, you could simply have put out a new Erev the next day. Must be because, like Shmuel is saying, you need to have the actual same food that was there in order to simply re-establish an Erev that existed, but in a chinami, it would be considered to be a hachona. If you went ahead, this is what Rabbah holds, it would be considered to be hachana for you to actually be making an Erev today. Okay, now, we had two Amoraim that went against Rabbah, right? So both Abaya and Rabbah Bar Rav Chanan had disagreed with Rabbah, and they said there is no such thing that an Erev, you're not allowed to make an Erev to just reestablish an Erev on Yom Tov for Shabbos, and they would hold that even if you need to make a statement, that it's not a problem. Because basically, Rabbah said that the Beitza Shenol de Yom Tov is Usser, and Abaye was tining that no, because Rav Yehuda says that you're allowed to go out there and renew the Erev. And that would mean that, according to Rabbah, that's considered to be Hachana, right? And when Rabbah said, no, it's not Hachana because you don't have to say anything, apparently, Abaya held, because he asked this on Rabbah, Abaya held, you can actually do that Erev, even if you would need to make a verbal statement to the effect that this bread is there. That means you could bring new bread. And so on. The Gemara is going to ask, if you could bring new bread, why did the Mishnah say you have to bring the old bread? Fine, we'll talk about that in a moment. And Rabbah Bar Rav Chanan also disagreed, because Rabbah said you're only allowed to do this if you don't need to say anything. Whereas Rabbah Bar Rav Chanan said, take a look, if Rabbah had seen the Braita, he would have understood that just doing it, Bichlal, is ipso facto, without saying anything, it's just as bad as going out to your field. He understood that Hachana is broader, but he didn't care. He said, I don't believe that's a problem of Hachana. So the question is, how did they explain the issue that we're talking about over here? Why did it say, therefore, that you must go back and that you need to be able to bring your Erev back? That was the Raya to Shmuel, that it has to be the same bread. V'rabbanan, so these Rabbanan, meaning Abaye and Rabbah Bar Rav Chanan, how do they explain the Mishnah? They said the Mishnah's not saying you have to go back. The Mishnah's just giving you an Eitzah Tova. Look, there's no need for you to have big hassle making a new Erev. All you need to do is take the old Erev back and everything will be fine. Okay, let me just...
Wow, a Rebbe made it without drinking. That was amazing.
That's because drink for one day, according to this sheet, that is a drink for both days. So it's not a problem.